This baseball season, catch every pitch at Long Neck Sports Grill. Each location has 4K TVs, so you never miss a game. The menu is so extensive, you can get something different every time you visit. I love the wings. And no place in Northern Kentucky has a better beer selection. Locations in Wilder, Hebron, and Richwood. And when the weather is warm, there's nothing better than a warm spring night on Long Neck's outdoor patio. Long Neck Sports Grill, this baseball season, stay late, come often.
No one covers the Bengals like ESPN 1530, Cincinnati's sports station.
All right, there you go. Hi, my name's Mo Egger, and you're listening to ESPN 1530, Cincinnati's sports station. I'm glad you're doing so. I'm glad you're here. We have a short show today. 2 hours. Vontech in Louisville, pregame at 5, tip at 6:30. So you and I until 5 o'clock as we talk sports. And nothing but sports. Rick Broering, is Rick going to join us in his normal spot? Is Rick okay? Do we know where? If you know Rick Broering, can you call him and say, hey, Mo and Taryn, mainly Taryn, trying to get a hold of you. You got your gig at 3:45 that we don't pay you for to talk Xavier basketball. Musketeers trying to bounce back after getting hammered by Seton Hall last week. Are back at home tonight to play a St. John's team that hasn't played in forever. Muskies trying to break a two-game losing streak. That game tonight at 8 o'clock. Rick will join us to talk about that and a big pair of games this weekend for the NKU Norse. And if Rick doesn't join us, we'll see if there's anybody on whitepages.com named Rick Broering, and we'll call them. I don't know. I just want to talk to a Rick Broering. I'd prefer to talk to the Rick Broering, but I will settle for any. That coming up in just about 40 minutes, and we'll talk about the offseason ahead for UC football. Marcus Freeman is going to have a chance to go somewhere, but could he stay at UC? We'll spend some time on that a little bit later this hour. Plus, Jason Fitz, 420 today. And we'll talk tanking. I was listening to Chad Brendel yesterday talk tanking, and Joe Judge and Doug Peterson. I've got some thoughts on tanking, which we saw on Sunday night. I tell you what, though, typically this is the show. The Bengals season ends on Sunday. Tony and Mo football show on Monday. And then we spend some time cleaning up, you know, whatever we didn't talk about on Monday, on Tuesday. And then we start to turn our attention to something else. And, well, there's some other stuff to talk about, right? College basketball is happening. Xavier's having a good season. I'm not sure if they're good or not, but they're having a good season. UC basketball is on the verge of, it feels like sliding into irrelevance in terms of the NCAA tournament. 2-6, two road games, back-to-back starting tomorrow night. It's been a rough season for John Brandon's team. And so we've got some college basketball. It's going to be an interesting couple of days, I think, for UC football with what happens with Marcus Freeman and Desmond Ritter's decision and the next step for that program after what happened in the Peach Bowl. But ordinarily, what do we do, right? What do we do? You get to that Wednesday, Thursday, all right, the Bengals, it's over. Don't beat a dead horse. Let's talk about the Reds. Except they're not giving us anything to talk about. You know, Mike Brown has taken a beating this week. In fact, ever since I started doing radio shows, writing blogs, writing columns, I've never been as hard on Mike Brown as I was with what I wrote on Monday. You may agree with it. You may disagree with it. All I can tell you is I write from the standpoint of a fan. I gave you my perspective as a fan. I didn't like Mike Brown basically saying, hey, this is what you people wanted. Get off my back. That's how I took his statement on Monday. Many disagree with my stance. That's completely okay. That's part of the gig, right? But Mike Brown has taken a beating over the last 48 hours. You know who should write him a thank you note? Bob Castellini. Because the longer that we're talking about Mike Brown and what that team's not doing well and how people are upset at the Bengals, you know what there's not as much focus on? The fact that the Cincinnati Reds have literally done nothing to make their team better since last season ended. And it's been more than 3 months. I heard somebody say earlier this week on a show like this, well, the offseason's just beginning for the Reds. And I'm like, dude, it's January. Normally, we have the caravan at the end of this month, and then spring training starts like 10 days later. Like, starting, the season ended in September. 3 months have passed. They've done nothing to make their team better. And this dynamic is interesting to me. I don't want to use what I see on Twitter as a statement about how everybody feels, but it's interesting. I wrote a blog. I wrote a column where I took Mike Brown to task, and he, in my opinion, deserves it. And I took him to task for something that he said. I didn't really take him to task for deciding to bring back Zach Taylor. I got to be honest with you. That decision doesn't move me that much. I don't want to say I don't care, but frankly, it really doesn't seem like it matters that much, at least in relation to some other issues the Bengals have. But it's interesting. I've been sifting through some of the reaction to it. I've got people telling me that I was unfair. Fine. That is completely valid. Maybe I am. Sometimes I have been. I don't think I am, but if you feel that way, fine. All I can do is tell you how I feel about something, and I try to convey it. You are welcome to disagree. That's part of the fun, right? We're not talking about world issues. We're not talking about chaos descending in D.C. today. I've had people tell me, right on, Mo, go after Mike Brown. And again, I don't take gratuitous shots at Mike Brown. I think in my career, I've written three columns directly about Mike Brown. And this week, he made a statement. I reacted to it. Normally, he doesn't say anything, so there's nothing for me to react to. But it's interesting, sifting through some of it, there is this theme. And it comes up whenever the Bengals are taking a PR hit, whether it's Mike specifically or somebody else with the organization. Seen a couple of responses. Go Reds! I don't disagree with that sentiment. Go Reds! But I also see stronger. Hey! This is why the Reds get all my support. Wish the Bengals had an owner like Bob Castellini. And it goes on and on and on and on. And one of the things that's always been interesting to me about the way we talk about these two franchises is the Reds do a great job of brand building. The Bengals do not. The Bengals, quite frankly, the last 5 years notwithstanding, have done a better job of team building if you look at the last, 15, 20 years. But Reds do a great job of brand building. Last season, both teams spent a ton of money in free agency. They stepped out of character. Reds spent a lot of money. In fact, it was a year ago today they signed Shogo Akiyama. Both teams, before their most recently completed season, spent an inordinate amount of money in free agency. Hell of a lot more money than you're used to. You get the sense the Reds are still cashing in on that, don't you? I don't hear that as much about the Bengals. Mike Brown is being crushed right now for deciding to bring back Zach Taylor. Again, the Zach Taylor thing, I don't know. If they would have fired him, fine. Bring him back. Okay, what are you going to do to fix the roster? Is Duke Tobin still going to be picking players? You're going to get some dudes in free agency. You're going to make this team better in 9 months, better enough that we could actually talk about them in the postseason. And frankly, to me, a lot of those things are independent of the head coach. But it is always interesting to me. We crush Mike Brown at every opportunity. The Cincinnati Reds had, let's call it what it was, kind of a disappointing year last year. But they did make the postseason. They did finish with a winning record. They do have a players that are worth building on. And yet, I get told after I'm patted on the head, oh, it's the pandemic. Well, the Reds lost money this year. It's hard. They couldn't sell a ticket. They don't know. Got to give Bob a break. That's why they can't bring back Trevor Bauer. Hey, I mean, it's just, cost efficiency. You Raisel Iglesias, you sold high on the guy. It doesn't make sense to bring back Archie Bradley. I mean, come on, the Reds lost money last year. I know the NFL's structure is different. There's a salary cap. There's a collective salary floor. If the Cincinnati Bengals decide, you know what, this free agency thing, we can't do it. Well, why? Well, he didn't sell a lot of tickets last year. Well, the pandemic, and we didn't make as much money, and, we don't even know if we're going to have fans in the stands next year. You're not going to let him get away with it, and I'm not going to let him get away with it. Why are we letting the Reds get away with it? I mean, am I crazy? 513-749-1530. This dynamic has always been interesting to me. I'm not here to tell you that the Bengals don't deserve any amount of criticism that you want to throw their way. I've spent the last 4 months crushing this team. And again, the Zach Taylor thing, the statement that Mike Brown made was kind of insulting to my intelligence because the statement was effectively, hey, this is what you people wanted, and I went and got a bright, young, energetic head coach. Get off me, man. In actuality, it's not what I wanted. I wanted an actual coaching search. I really don't think they went on one. I wanted the most qualified potential candidate who was out there. I don't think they got it, but In terms of bringing him back, okay. Meanwhile, right up the street, you got a baseball team that has literally done nothing. Now you might say, well, wait a minute, Mo. Nobody else in baseball aside from the Padres are doing anything. Okay. Fine. So we're just going to be content with the Reds choosing to be just like everybody else. I do understand they couldn't sell a ticket last year. I really do. But frankly, as much as I can recognize and appreciate all the really good things this Reds ownership group has done,
Hey, when you and your buddies are looking for a place to watch baseball this season, how about Longneck Sports Grill? Each location has 4K TVs all over the place, so you'll never miss a pitch. The menu is so extensive that you can get something different every time you visit, and no place in Northern Kentucky has a better beer selection. There are locations in Wilder, Hebron, and Richwood, and when the weather is warm, there's nothing better than a spring night on Longneck's outdoor patio. This baseball season, Longneck Sports Grill. Stay late. Come often.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
If you're hurt that much for cash, sell the team. I mean, that's kind of happening around the country right now. Pandemic has had an impact on a lot of businesses, and folks, unfortunately, in many respects, have had to bail or bring in other investors, bring in other partners, do different ways of doing things. It's odd. In fact, I even saw on Monday, I got this reaction from folks on social media. Never going to another Bengals game again. Okay, fine. Your prerogative, do what you want to do. I don't tell people to go to games. I don't tell people not to go to games. But then some of those same folks, man, I can't wait to be at Great American Ballpark this summer. Now, I share that sentiment because my favorite thing to do is to go to Cincinnati Reds games, to go to Major League Baseball games. I'll go to as many as I can, as long as I can this summer. Cannot wait. But isn't that kind of interesting? Cincinnati Bengals just had a really bad year, and the owner spoke out and did something that is not that popular, never going to go again. The Cincinnati Reds have spent 3 months doing literally nothing. Literally nothing. I mean, it's as if the people who run this club have been on vacation. Remember when COVID hit and folks were stuck on cruise ships for weeks on end? Kind of feels like what the Reds front office is doing. Can't wait to go to the ballpark this summer. And again, if that's where you are, I'm with you. I'm with you there. But stop telling me that one is run so much better than the other. Make your criticisms of Mike Brown. Make your criticisms of the Bengals. I certainly have. But can we stop pretending that juxtaposed against the baseball team in town, the Bengals are doing it the wrong way and the Reds are doing it the right way? Because the right way for me is take the team that you had last year and try to make it better. Instead, they've willingly and knowingly made it worse. Maybe that changes. Maybe that changes between now and the beginning of spring training. Maybe that changes between now and the end of the week. Hell, maybe it changes between now and the end of the day. All I can tell you is this. Ordinarily, on this day, the Wednesday after the football season ends, all right, for what I do for a living, look, I just beat the dead horse of the Bengals for the last couple of days. Let's turn our attention to something else. Boy, I would love to. And while I don't think the Reds have a bad team right now, they didn't have a good one last year for most of the season. And over the last 3 months, they've sat by idly and made it worse. We're just going to nod along with that and be okay with it? And let the excuses roll in. If we're going to do that, do it for the football owner. At Mo Egger 1530 on Twitter. 513-749-1530, 866-702-3776 are the phone numbers. Legitimately, the folks who run the Reds should send the Bengals a fruit basket. Hey, thanks, Mike. Thanks so much. Everybody's writing about you and talking about you and tweeting about you. Meanwhile, our winter vacation's we're going to extend it for a couple of weeks. And maybe we'll get around to signing some dudes that make our team better. Maybe. While we listen to trade offers for basically all of our good players. You got to be fair, man. You're going to hold one team to a standard. And I know that the sports are structured differently. You got to hold the other team to the same standard. Beat up on Mike Brown. But at least they acknowledge that the Reds have spent the last 3 months doing nothing. If the pandemic is the reason, then let's spend the next couple of months giving Mike Brown the excuse of the pandemic as well. I'm guessing nobody wants to do that. 17 after 3. Mo at ESPN 1530. You say you can tweet me. You can read my Mike Brown piece at ESPN1530.com. Also, conversations with Paul Daner Jr. and Justin Williams of The Athletic on the Bengals and Bearcats, respectively. Your phone calls are ahead. I got to admit something about Monday's news. I got to admit something about Zach Taylor. You're probably not going to like this. I think you're going to disagree. That's okay. I'll tell you what it is next on ESPN 1530. 21 minutes after 3, this is ESPN 1530. My name's Mo Egger. Thanks to Chad Brendel for filling in yesterday. Louisville and Virginia Tech will tip off at 6:30. By the way, I just saw Louisville's game against Georgia Tech on Saturday has been postponed. COVID issues in the Georgia Tech program. But Cardinals scheduled to play tonight against a Virginia Tech team that has been surprisingly good and efficient on the offensive end. It's getting 4 points tonight. There's a little look inside what we might have done had we still been doing locks of the night. Pre-game at 5 o'clock here on ESPN 1530, cutting our show short by an hour. Have we heard from Rick? I'm like worried about him. Is he okay? Is he all right? We're just going to call him anyway. See if he answers the bell. Maybe a confirmation is not something that we need from him. And just 3:40 on Wednesdays, boom, he's there no matter what. So I started the show by saying, look, man, turn your attention to the Reds. You see a team that has stood still for 3 months, and maybe that's acceptable to you. But then let it be acceptable if you're a Bengals fan. I completely understand this. The nature of the sport, of the two different leagues, of the two different teams are entirely different, but it's interesting to me how we frame the conversation about one franchise and then how we frame the conversation about the other. Joe is calling from, believe it or not, Cincinnati. Hi, Joe.
Hello, Mel. How are you today?
I'm good. What's going on?
Well, the reason I personally don't give Mike Brown a break is because in the 90s, when they were campaigning for the stadium, new stadium tax, he said he needed a new stadium with luxury boxes to sign free agents and compete for championships.
And that hasn't happened. Well,
until last year when he signed some free agents. He did middle-of-the-road free agents.
Yeah, no, last year was their first big splash, and you're right. The public has not gotten the return on investment that it made in the stadium, but the angst and the contempt you hold for Mike Brown, will you hold that towards the people who run the Cincinnati Reds when they don't do anything for an offseason?
I don't really care about the Reds. I'm not that big of a baseball fan.
Right.
But Mike Brown is a lawyer, Katie is a lawyer, and Troy is a law clerk, and they masquerade like they know football, and they're too loyal to fire anybody who's mediocre like Duke Tobin.
Yeah.
He's been there since 1999.
Again, you'll get – thank you, Joe. You'll get no argument for me that their loyalty at times, oftentimes, guides decisions that frequently don't turn out right. And Duke Tobin, to me – you know, the Zach Taylor thing, I'll admit this to you. I was expecting that he would come back. Ordinarily, an announcement like that moves me emotionally somehow. Like – at the end of the 2010 season, I thought it's time for a new head coach. And about 3 days after the season ends, they have a press conference. Mike Brown, Marvin Lewis, they announce Marvin's coming back. That moved me. I didn't like it. I was unhappy. Now, to the Bengals' credit, it kind of worked out. The next 5 years, Marvin took the team to the postseason. They had really good teams. Marvin, I thought in 2014, should have been considered the coach of the year in the NFL. Or at least got into consideration for the award. When they moved on from him, when they decided to keep him in 2017, I was angry. I was angry in large part because we had all kind of set ourselves up for, hey, the Bengals are finally moving on, and they didn't. It wasn't because of any personal dislike for Marvin or lack of appreciation for what he's done. It just, wait a minute, we've been operating under the belief they're moving on, and they didn't, and that pissed me off. 2018, they moved on from Marvin. There was relief, excitement, some sadness, because the Marvin Lewis tenure wasn't supposed to conclude without the Bengals doing more than just winning the division four times. When they hired Marvin Lewis, there was hope. When they hired Zach Taylor, there was skepticism mixed with curiosity, mixed with intrigue, because I didn't know. There was not a lot to hang your hat on when it came to Zach Taylor. Marvin Lewis, I could at least say, well, man, this dude was a coordinator for one of the best defenses in the history of the NFL. The announcement that Zach is coming back, which really wasn't as much of an announcement that Zach is coming back and more of just a proclamation of faith they have in the head coach, didn't move me. And I got to be honest with you, had the proclamation that Zach, they're happy with the way things are going with Zach, had it instead been an announcement that they're moving on from Zach Taylor, I don't think that would have moved me either. And I think most Bengals fans could echo those sentiments. Had they fired him, look, he's 6-25-1. That's what happens. You lose an insane number of games. You have a winning percentage that's worse than Hugh Jackson's or Dave Shula's. You're in the crosshairs, and chances are you're going to get let go in most NFL cities. Certainly wouldn't have had an issue with it. I wouldn't have felt like, man, the Bengals just cut loose a dude who's a great football mind, complete leader. This is a guy, boy, you're going to rue the day you let Zach Taylor go. At the same time, keeping him, I got to be honest with you. I'm more concerned with the roster and the people and processes that go into determining who's on the roster, who's going to get paid what, who's going to leave, who's going to come here in free agency. Who are they going to draft? Does Zach Taylor have something to do with those decisions? Sure. Had they moved on from him, my next question wouldn't have been about Zach Taylor. It would have been,
this baseball season, catch every pitch at Long Neck Sports Grill. Each location has 4K TVs, so you never miss a game. The menu is so extensive, you can get something different every time you visit. I love the wings, and no place in Northern Kentucky has a better beer selection. Locations in Wilder, Hebron, and Richwood. And when the weather is warm, there's nothing better than a warm spring night on Longneck's outdoor patio. Longneck Sports Grill, this baseball season, stay late, come often.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
About, are you really going to find anybody any better? Understanding the parameters the Bengals work within when they hire a head coach. They're not bringing in Urban Meyer. They're not going to go get, you know, whoever the hottest commodity out there is. And frankly, this season, or this offseason, I should say, the pool of candidates seems to be a little bit more shallow. There doesn't seem to be a lot of hot candidates out there. Everybody but Houston's going to interview Eric Bieniemy, who I hope gets a chance because I feel like he deserves one. But the home run hire that was going to create ripple effects around the NFL if the Bengals moved on from Zach Taylor, that's not what they were going to do. So had they moved on, I would have sort of assumed that the next coach was going to have a profile similar to Zach Taylor's. Maybe they'd be a better head coach. Maybe they'd be better set up for success. The fact that they're bringing him back, though, it doesn't bother me. It doesn't make me feel good. I'm unmoved by it. That's kind of a problem. I think it says a lot about the state of the team, that there's bigger issues than who your head coach is. I think it also says something about Zach Taylor, in that I'm unmoved by him. I feel, meh, like I'm supposed to feel strongly one way or the other about you. The fact that I don't feel great about you says something about the work you haven't done. The fact that I'm not that angry that they're keeping you says a lot about the state of the team that you work for. I don't trust this front office. I don't trust Duke Tobin. I don't trust this front office to take this roster, which is not very good, and make it good enough to compete for championships. Not good enough to win 8 games. Not good enough to win a couple more games than they did in 2020. Not good enough to play a meaningful football game in December, but compete for a championship in a division that has 3 playoff teams and 2 future Hall of Fame coaches. I don't trust this front office to do that. And that matters to me a lot more than Zach Taylor does. That's not good. 330, 513-749-1530 and 866-702-3776. A lot more on this. I simply want to know, why do we frame how one team is run? This is not a personal attack on any one owner. but we frame how one team is talked about. Terrence said to me during the break, well, the Reds made the playoffs this year. Come on, man. That's we're good. They made the playoffs, and now wipe our hands and go into rebuild mode again? Does it feel to you like the Cincinnati Reds are going to the end of the earth to make their team better? The criticism of the Bengals is they don't go to the end of the earth to make their team better. Aren't we seeing the exact same thing from the Reds this offseason? Your phone calls are ahead. There's going to be something to follow over the next day or so when it comes to UC football. We'll spend a few minutes on that next on ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station. Sports update, a service of Kelsey Chevrolet, home of lifetime powertrain protection and guaranteed credit approval from their family to yours for life. KelseyChev.com. I'm going to get crushed for that. Xavier and St. John's tonight at the Cintas Center. Muskie's trying to break. Musketeers are trying to break a two-game losing streak. I wrote down six-game losing streak. I really do have Bearcats on the brain. Sorry. Actually, for UC, it's a five-game losing streak. Red Storm haven't played since they beat Georgetown 94-83 on December the 20th. Musketeers last played the night before New Year's Eve when they were pretty much manhandled by Seton Hall. Travis Steele said after the game the tougher team won the game convincingly. It would be hard to dispute that. They were never going to be as good shooting the ball from outside as they were against Oklahoma. But starting in the, I guess, with the Creighton game, and really down the stretch of the Marquette game, the outside shooting has dried up, to say the least. Also, tonight on ESPN 1530, we have number 19 Virginia Tech at Louisville. That game will tip off at 6:30. Pregame coverage starts at 5 on ESPN 1530. Meanwhile, there's a slew of Marcus Freeman reports, reportedly interviewed with Notre Dame earlier this week, an interview set for LSU. I've seen reports that interview is going to take place tomorrow. Nonetheless, he's a hot commodity. Texas has been floated out there this week. Auburn's been floated out there this week, and you could certainly understand why. Number one, he's done a great job as the defensive coordinator at UC. Number two, I would imagine there are people around the country who checked in with UC football for the first time all season or for the first time in a long time and watched the Peach Bowl and saw a defense that was without two All-American DBs up to the task against the Bulldogs. I asked Justin Williams, who was on the show with me yesterday. I was about to say Justin Fields. I don't know where my mind is. I'm about to call Justin Williams Justin Fields. Justin Williams from The Athletic was with me on Sports Talk on 700 WLW last night, and I asked him about this kind of being the time to make a bounce to a job like the one that he is being interviewed for this week.
You know, maybe. I mean, honestly, I think every game they had him this year was house money. He had opportunities to leave last offseason, and he didn't do it. But yeah, I think you're right. He is in high demand, and he should be. And whatever he ends up deciding is well-deserved, whether that's him staying or him going. I think, as ridiculous as it sounds, when you run down the list of Notre Dame, LSU, Texas, Auburn, you know, whoever, these places that might need a defensive coordinator and that are going to talk to him, it seems crazy to think, well, he'll just tell him no and he wants to stay at Cincinnati. I don't think it's like an unrealistic possibility. It might even be a decent to good chance that he comes back. Now, after he goes through the process of talking to these places and seeing these places, it's the same thing as these recruits coming out of high school, that they have a lot they can sell, and he might well decide, yeah, I could go here and you know, make some money, but also be at the highest level of the sport and have a lot of chance of success. I wouldn't be surprised either way, I guess. You know, maybe I think if he leaves, Notre Dame just seems to make a bunch of sense. Mike Mickens is there. It's kind of in the same region. But if at the end of the week, I mean, yes, people from LSU or Auburn, their jaws might hit the floor. But if you know, next week or 2 weeks from now, it's Marcus Freeman's going to be the defensive coordinator at Cincinnati next season, it will be a great, you know, pleasant surprise, but I won't be shocked by it.
You can hear that entire conversation. We got into who may succeed Marcus Freeman at UC if he does indeed leave. A lot of offseason questions, the Dez Ritter question. I think we're all expecting Dez to make an announcement sometime this week about whether or not he's going to stay at UC. And I feel, as a Bearcat fan, I'm rooting for Dez to do whatever he chooses and for him to have success. I feel like he's going to stay, and that would feel like the right decision to me. We talked about that and so much more, and some UC basketball stuff as well. So you can hear that conversation at ESPN1530.com. This, to me, is kind of – and look, the Peach Bowl was – to me, it was frustrating from the standpoint of being this close to the biggest win in the history of the program, and you're this close and you don't take advantage – It doesn't invalidate the season by any stretch, doesn't undo what's been done by this coaching staff and these players by any stretch. But you do wonder when you're going to have an opportunity like that. That doesn't mean the Bearcats next season are going to go 5-7. But if you think of everything that has to go into that, from you got to have a great season, got to win your league championship, got to be the highest ranked of all the Group of Five schools, got to go toe-to-toe with a powerhouse opponent for 58 minutes, and even then you still got to close the deal. Who knows when they're going to be there again? Maybe it's next year. Might be for a long time. Who knows? We don't know. A school like UC, if Ohio State loses the national championship game, there's a decent shot they're in it next year. Right? I mean, it's just opportunities are different for different schools. When you have them, you got to take advantage. UC had one, and for a variety of reasons, they didn't take advantage. But looking ahead now, here to me is kind of the next step in the evolution of the program, right? And it's the one that the program didn't exactly completely succeed at when Brian Kelly left. Because in 2010, there was a dip, huge recruiting gap. They went 4-8. Now, 11-12, they shared Big East championships, but let's be honest, those teams, while they were quite good, weren't exactly the same as the ones that had preceded them in 08 and 09. And then Tuberville comes in and the program bottoms out. Assuming that Luke Fickell's going to be back for year number 5, and that feels like a pretty safe bet right now. I do think Luke Fickell's next job after UC is going to be in the NFL, by the way. But I don't think that's going to happen this year. But now that the challenge is you've gotten the program back, it's up here. I think you could argue pretty successfully it's the premier program in the American Athletic Conference. People at UCF might have something to say about that, but I feel comfortable saying that. You've been on the big stage. You've been in the top 10 of the college football playoff rankings. What comes with that? A, you have a roster of players who now are going to have opportunities to leave school early. Obviously, the fact that seniors can come back changes this dynamic a little bit, but yeah, you got players who could leave early. Is your recruiting good enough to fill the holes left by them? Everything I've read and heard from recruiting analysts would say the answer is yes. And inevitably, you're not going to keep your staff together. One of the more remarkable things about this season for me was the fact that the Bearcats won 11 games in 2018 and 2019 and yet still brought back the same head coach and same three coordinators, offense, defense, special teams. That doesn't happen. It doesn't happen at the Power 5 level. It sure as hell doesn't happen at the Group of 5 level, and it did for UC. That, to me, was a major reason why they were so good this year. It's one thing to keep rising. It's another thing to, A, stay where you are, and then, B, take the next step when you're in a position to take the next step. And that next step now is close the deal in a game like that. Or next year, run the table, go on the road and beat Notre Dame, go on the road and beat Indiana, run the table in your league. And on that Sunday, when they announce the college football playoff teams next year, have an even more emphatic case than you did this season. That last step, I think, is the hardest. It's kind of like with the basketball team right now, right? Now I think you realize, you know what? It is hard to get to the NCAA tournament every single season. It is hard. It's hard to stay this good if you're UC football. Because of everything I just outlined. Now, can you take that next step? And that's, I think, the question we're going to spend a lot of time talking about this offseason. 18 minutes away from 4 o'clock. First, Xavier home tonight for St. John's. We're going to call Rick Broering. Hopefully he answers. Normally he's with us on Wednesdays. He's been AWOL all day. But if Rick doesn't answer, I don't know what we're going to do. Actually, I do, but I'd rather talk to Rick. We'll try that next on ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station. I haven't been called the DL in years, but, you know, don't update the imaging in 2021. 14 minutes away from 4 o'clock, this is ESPN 1530. My name is Mo Egger. On Wednesdays, we wake up Rick Broering with MusketeerReport.com, also the color announcer on NKU radio broadcasts. You can follow him on Twitter at Rick Broering, and we wake him up to talk about Xavier basketball. We woke you up. Good morning. How are you?
See, why do you got to ruin the magic like that? Like, no one knows what I'm doing over here. They think I'm just up 24-7 if you just let it be. If you just let me roll on to the radio show 20 seconds after I rise, then it's fine.
I tell you what, I'm often called on Saturday mornings to go on the Gary Jeff Walker show. And by the way, when I go on that show, I am easily the most sane person he has on. And it's like 8:20 on Saturday mornings. You, and I'm like getting out of bed. You have answered the bell so far better than I usually do on Saturday mornings.
I'm ready to go. What you got for me?
So here's the deal. I'm just going to be transparent with you and the audience. All right?
All right.
I'm going to do this show this afternoon. And then tonight, I've got to do a 30-minute show after the Reds Hot Stove League before the Xavier basketball game. And I thought, you know what? Be a really good thing to have Rick Boring on right before the Xavier game. You got a big Xavier audience. We'll lead into it. That's good programming, right? But I have you on today, so here's what's going to happen. This conversation we're having right now is going to air again at 7:20 before the game.
Heck, just call me up again. We'll do it all over again. Say the same exact things. It'll be like a dress rehearsal. The second time, we'll do it even better.
Well, let's see how you do here. Let's start with the Seton Hall game, which I'm sure a lot of Musketeer fans don't want to revisit. It was obvious watching it. Seton Hall, the tougher team. Travis Steele said as much afterwards. What I want to know is, how do you instill toughness in a week?
Well, I don't know that you can instill toughness. I think the other thing about this Seton Hall game that people need to realize, like, Travis isn't wrong in what he's saying. This team wasn't tough enough. They didn't defend well enough. All that is true. But we also have to realize that this Xavier team is built to beat people by being skilled offensively, making shots, outscoring them. They're not built to be tougher than you. They're not built to out-rebound you. They're not built to play bully ball in the paint. They're playing with no post. So that's the part of this that we have to realize is, like, there's an expectation that a team like Seton Hall, which is the biggest in the Big East, is going to probably bully you on the glass and beat you up. You have to be tougher with the ball and not get deflections, not get it stolen when you're on the offensive end, things like that that happen against Seton Hall. But you know, in terms of the whole, like, toughness thing, I think there's some things you can do in terms of focusing on rebounding and just being stronger with the ball, but I don't think that this team is going to come that far this week or the entire season with their overall toughness and rebounding and defense.
They were not as good shooting the ball as they were against Oklahoma. I should say they were never going to be as good at shooting the ball from the outside as they were against Oklahoma. I don't think they're as bad as they were against Seton Hall. Is this going to be a streaky outside shooting team?
Well, that's what they're kind of showing us, right? I mean, if you go back to the first several games of the year and we were all like, well, they didn't have everybody yet. And then they got everybody and they played pretty well against Cincinnati and then played really well against Oklahoma and Marquette, at least on the offensive end. Now two games in a row, Creighton and Seton Hall, they haven't shot well at all again. So I think what we're finding out is this is an inconsistent offensive team, but they do have some firepower. So, you know, they've shown they can put up a big number against quality competition, Oklahoma and Marquette, two teams that are pretty solid, not great. They just have to find a little more consistency. I think the big thing we were thinking is after they got those guys back, like Adam Kunkel, and they added Ben Stanley to the roster, and Colby Jones was available after quarantine, we thought there's enough weapons here that they wouldn't have that night where all three guys or all four guys that they're relying on to score for them can't get it going. We thought, you know, two of the shooters will be on each night, and the last two games, that wasn't really the case. So they just need to get back on track. Fortunately, against St. John's, it's a fairly soft landing spot. The Johnny's not exactly the best defensive team in the country. They rank outside the top 300 in both three-point percentage allowed and two-point percentage allowed. So if Xavier executes strong with the ball, doesn't turn it over, they should be okay in this one.
All right, I want to ask you about St. John's in a second. Let's talk about Ben Stanley, who might have been one of the few bright spots of the Seton Hall game. What have been the early returns of him?
Mixed bag. I think it's been kind of what you would expect. Coming from Hampton, they knew it was a team that didn't play defense really at all. Last year where he was at. So that was going to be a steep learning curve for him to learn Xavier's system. The fact that he got a late start because originally he was ruled ineligible to play this year and he was practicing with the scout team instead of, you know, running with the starters and getting good reps in, it definitely slowed him down in terms of that learning curve. But the last two games he's shown he can provide you a little instant offense off the bench, The problem is he's not rebounding or defending very well. So they have to kind of take that trade off where Jason Carter is a good rebounder defender at the forward spot. Ben Stanley has not proven to be that, but he can give you a little more offense than Jason, maybe. So that's kind of what Travis Steele and his staff are weighing right now as they try to get Ben up to speed on the defensive end.
St. John's hasn't played in forever. The last time they took the court, they hung 94 on Georgetown, which I think a lot of people can do. What is this Red Storm team good at?
Turning you over. I mean, it's what Mike Anderson likes to do. He wants to do the 40 minutes of hell, the old Nolan Richardson style of basketball. They don't quite press you the entire game with this year's team, especially if you prove you can take care of the ball a little bit. In fact, they'll play some zone in the half court. But for the most part, you're going to get pressure man-to-man, and they need easy buckets. They don't shoot it that well. They need to get turnovers that convert into transition points. They need to beat you up the floor after you make a basket and you're lollygagging getting back. Like, that's how they win. And so I think the biggest thing for Xavier there, again, is just you have to take care of the ball and you have to rebound on the defensive end. Two things they didn't do a great job of against Seton Hall.
Rick Broering, MusketeerReport.com, is on Twitter, at Rick Broering. Now, that was good. We're going to run that. That's going to be perfect. Now, you know, folks who aren't listening now who hear it, you know, a little bit before 7:30, they're going to think that's fresh content. That was really good. But now here's the part where we make the edit. And now for this show, I ask you about NKU. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's go.
What has it been like watching teams play the same opponent back-to-back days?
Weird. I kind of like it from the fans' perspective because, for instance, this past weekend, at the end of the first game NKU had against Purdue Fort Wayne, there was a little bit of yapping back and forth. Like, guys came chest-to-chest. No pushing or shoving or anything like that, but guys were in their faces and barking at each other after the game. So the next game, they come back out. They got to play the same guys, guard the same guys, and it was a little more heated than you would have expected the second ever matchup in Horizon League history between NKU and Purdue Fort Wayne to be. So I've enjoyed it. Talking to some of the coaches, they have not. They can't stand it at all. They don't like playing back-to-back days. I don't think they like playing the same opponent back-to-back. And I think there's also an element here of just that the turnarounds have been pretty drastic. Like, you've seen Wright State beat a team by 39 points in Oakland on Friday night and then turn around and lose by 10 points to Oakland on Saturday. So there does seem to be an element here that's very unpredictable or It's not consistent. Teams aren't turning around and playing the same way back-to-back night. So right. I'm not sure how to assess that.
When things did get a little heated, did either you or Jim Kelch drop the obligatory chippy during the broadcast?
You know, I don't think we did. Chippy isn't in my vocabulary, and to be honest, I don't think it's in Jim's either. I think we might have used words more like heated.
Okay, because whenever there's like a game and things are getting a little heated, inevitably somebody has to refer to things getting a little chippy. It's a little disappointing to me that neither of you brought up that word.
Yeah, that's a great broadcaster word. It really is. It's just not one. You know,
this baseball season, catch every pitch at Longneck Sports Grill. Each location has 4K TVs, so you never miss a game. The menu is so extensive, you can get something different every time you visit. I love the wings. And no place in Northern Kentucky has a better beer selection. Locations in Wilder, Hebron, and Richwood. And when the weather is warm, there's nothing better than a warm spring night on Longneck's outdoor patio. Longneck Sports Grill, this baseball season, stay late, come often.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Outsider. I'm not nobody, really like a
nobody broadcaster. Nobody uses that in real conversation. No, like, two guys aren't sitting there watching the game going, man, it's getting chippy. No. Like, so, you know, actually never use it. Here's what I do want to know, though. They play Cleveland State on the road. The Vikings have not lost a game in the league. Are they that good?
No, I don't think they're that good. They have surprised some people, I think. And the thing for this NKU team is that any win is a good win. They're still so young, and they're trying to find their way. And, I mean, they are really just scraping these games out. Both games against Purdue, Fort Wayne, they were in spots where, you know, they looked like they were in trouble in the second half, and they found a way to come back. I think the coaching staff is just doing a phenomenal job, considering they're playing three freshmen a ton of minutes. And they don't really have any bona fide shooters or scorers outside of that. So I've been really impressed with the job they've done to find some of these wins, but I think it's going to be up and down and inconsistent all season, to be honest.
All right. I appreciate it as always. Tell your friends you're going to be on 700 WLW tonight at like 7:20.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll start tweeting the links out now.
Please do. Rick Brewing, MusketeerReport.com. We'll chat next week. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
He is on Twitter at Rick Brewing. Thank you so much. 4 minutes away from 4 o'clock, our buddy Jason Fitz. From ESPN is coming up at 4:20 on a slew of different issues. I've used the word slew twice today in an hour. Slew. On a number of different, on a lot of stuff. How about that? Hey, everybody's mad. Everybody's mad at what they saw on TV on Sunday night. You knew it was coming. Sometimes you could see something coming from a mile away. I'm talking about the tank job by the Philadelphia Eagles on Sunday night. Let's spend some time on it. There's some easy, simple fixes. We can do it. Plus more on the Bengals and why you want to give Bob Castellini a pass and not Mike Brown, why we talk about one team differently than the other, and some more UC football stuff as well between now and 5 o'clock on ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station.
Are you ready for some football?
Hi, this is Dan Hoare. Join Dave Lapham and me for every play of every game on the official home of the Bengals, ESPN 1530.
All right, here we go. It's 4 after 4. This is ESPN 1530. My name's Mo Egger. Glad you're here. Thank you so much for spending part of your Wednesday afternoon with us. Vatek in Louisville. College hoops, 5 o'clock, so we're done early. Jason Fitz, ESPN, is going to be with us in about 15 minutes. A few other thoughts on what the Bengals have done this week and what they haven't done, what the Reds haven't done over the last 3 months. And a few UC thoughts as well. You know what I thought was interesting on Sunday? I'm going to talk about the Philadelphia Eagles tanking, which is what they did. What was interesting to me about that was the reaction to it. I'll admit to you, I didn't like it because I tuned into that game. I had no dog in the fight. I don't care if the Washington football team wins the NFC East. I don't care if the New York Giants win the NFC East. I had no emotional or financial stake in that game other than I wanted to watch a good game with some drama that had something riding on it. And the moment Nate Sudfeld came in for the Philadelphia Eagles, that drama was stripped away and the story became not Washington winning the division and the New York Giants not making the postseason with their crummy 6-10 record. The story became Doug Peterson, perhaps egged on by the people that he works for, blatantly tanking. And I know he said before the game, we're going to play Sudfeld, but frankly, in a game like that, three-point game, a lot riding on it, you have a quarterback who is playing okay, and you put in a guy who is inexperienced, frankly, not that good. There's a reason why he's essentially a third-string guy. You're tanking. And not even putting in Nate Sudfeld if you watch that game. And I know a lot of people have already beaten this game to death, but if you watch that game, didn't exactly see an offense that was, you know, with its foot on the gas, acting with urgency. So, plus the decision to kick a field goal, or not kick a field goal when they're down 17-14 before they put Sudfeld in. So, but what was interesting to me was the reaction to it. People were aghast, pissed, angry, shocked. Boy, this is a stain on the sport. This is bad for the game. Well, here's how I took it. Maybe I'm wrong, but here's how I took it. And you can tell me what you think. That we have talked about teams tanking for so long, and we talk about teams tanking so often, and we're either cavalier and dismissive about it, or in many respects, we encourage it. That Sunday night in Philadelphia just kind of felt like the next step in the evolution of tanking. Not only that, but we've seen teams in the front office effectively tank. The Miami Dolphins last year, their front office tried to tank. The players cared too much, and the coaching was too good, and they hitched their wagon to a guy in Ryan Fitzpatrick who's too good of a quarterback to allow his team to totally crater. But the front office tried to tank. This is it's a strategy we talk about all the time. In fact, I wrote a column for The Athletic in 2018, in which I advocated the Bengals tanking. The response I got was exceedingly positive. Last year, the Bengals lost a game to the Miami Dolphins. Remember? They were down by 15. They came all the way back. They still lost. There's not a Bengals fan that I know who wasn't elated that they lost the game that day. A couple of weeks ago, the New York Jets lost a game that they were on the verge of winning until the last play of the game when the Las Vegas Raiders threw a pass downfield against a zero-blitz defense that was poorly designed. It's the kind of defense you call if you're trying not to win. Now, they fired the defensive coordinator, but there were Jets fans and even people in the national media giving credit to the defensive coordinator for calling a defense that was so blatantly unprepared to work. So we've had this conversation for so long, and we've seen teams either do it or we've encouraged them to do it, that to me the next step in this process was eventually a coach during a game was effectively going to eliminate his team's chances of winning. Or better put, he was going to tank. So I guess what I want to know is, how do you want it? Do you want tanking to be a thing? If so, you're signing up for more things like Sunday night. Or do you not want tanking to be a thing? And if the answer to that question is yes, then you have to figure out how to get rid of tanking and simply hoping that these guys play for the sanctity of the game and the integrity of the sport. That's not going to work. What you have to do is you have to eliminate the rewards that come with losing. I know a very woke take to have in sports these days is to get rid of sports drafts. I love the NFL draft. I love the NBA draft. Why? Those things keep the NFL in the news cycle for a while. They're fun to talk about. They give me content. They keep the NFL in the news cycle for weeks on end when there's no games being played. And as an event, it's fun. It's the NFL draft is a fun event. But if you really wanted to get rid of tanking, you would get rid of the incentives for losing. And the incentive for losing for the Philadelphia Eagles the other night was to move up a couple of spots in the draft. Now, that's not going to happen. The NFL is a moneymaker. It's a TV show. And again, it's something that keeps the league in the news cycle during a huge stretch of time where there's no games being played. But if you really want to get rid of the tanking, get rid of the incentives for losing. But also, how about we increase the rewards for winning? Whether that's flip the draft in reverse order where the best team gets the first pick, or maybe you could do this in salary cap leagues. Baseball, you could change the luxury tax threshold. They don't have a hard cap or anything, but maybe the team that finishes with the best record gets more money to spend on players than the team with the worst record. Somebody suggested to me last night on 700 WLW something that I think is a good suggestion. You raise the floor for the teams that perform most poorly, effectively forcing them to spend more money than perhaps the team with the best record that maybe has a lower floor. If you don't like any of those things, if you don't want to get rid of the rewards for losing, if you don't want to reward the teams for winning with more than just trophies and rings, then what you saw on Sunday night ain't going to be the last time you see a team openly tank. I'm an NBA fan. Taryn's an NBA fan. I know what tanking looks like in the NBA. I see it every March and April. I'm a Knicks fan. I've watched them tank. I see what it looks like. The best players on the team don't play. The best players on the team don't play for significant minutes. And, I mean, you could see it, but it's rare that it really directly impacts something significant. First of all, the playoff field is so large. But I've seen it. I'm familiar with it. I get it. I don't like it. I don't want there to be an NBA draft. I want to reward the teams that do best, and I want to punish the teams that do worse. Now, somebody also suggested to me, well, you can have relegation like European soccer. That's not going to happen. These NFL and NBA and baseball franchises, their owners are not going to agree to being punted to a lower-level league. So forget about that. This is easy. So the question I have for you is, do you want to get rid of tanking or not? If you didn't like what you saw on Sunday night and you never want to see that again, and that's bad for the game, it's bad for the sport. And by the way, I think for Doug Peterson, Jason Kelce has come out and spoke out in support of his head coach, which you would expect. You know, the real issue is how he handles the situation with his players. But if you didn't like it, if it's bad for the integrity of the game, if it's bad for the sport, if it's something you don't want to see on television, you don't want to see a team that's doing anything but trying everything it can to win, then you got to come up with a solution. My guess is you really don't want to get rid of tanking. If the Cincinnati Bengals week 16 last year against the Miami Dolphins actively tanked, let's say instead of playing Andy Dalton, they said to hell with it, we're playing Ryan Finley and we're not playing Tyler Boyd. We're going to call up some dudes off the practice squad. And you know what we're going to do? We're not only not going to play our best guys, but we're going to formulate a strategy that effectively gets the game over as quickly as possible. That would have been celebrated by every Bengals fan that I know. Every Bengals fan that I know. Players may have still screwed it up. Players almost screwed it up that day. My guess is we don't really have an issue with tanking. But it is interesting how something that we talk about as a concept, when you actually see it unfold, what's kind of ugly. That wasn't fun to watch on Sunday night. Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth calling the game for NBC certainly seemed to take issue with it. They were bothered by it. It took them a while to admit they were bothered by it, but they sounded bothered by it. So do you want to get rid of that or not? If you want to get rid of it, then you have to be willing to make some adjustments to how we handle the teams that perform most poorly. I've been an advocate of getting rid of drafts since I started to understand sports. My take since I was a kid has always been, why can't the kids coming out of college choose where they go work? Like, I'm going to get a chance to do that one day. Well, why can't college football and basketball players? But nobody wants to do that. I'm patted on the head every time I bring that up. But, all right, the ultimate reward for a team that tanks is early draft choices. Then don't you have to totally flip the draft on its head? And are there other things you would do? I would. I would give the team that wins the Super Bowl $15 million more to spend in free agency. I would take the team that finishes dead last, worst record in the league, and you're going to spend $15 million less than the league average. And we could do the math on that if we have to. If you don't want to do that, then settle in for more games like Sunday nights. Do you want to fix it? And if so, how? 513-749-1530, 866-702-3776, and at Moegger1530. Is how you hit me up on Twitter. I'm going to explain something I've taken some heat for coming up in just about 20 minutes. It's Bengals related. And I got a few thoughts on UC basketball that we have to get to between now and 5 o'clock. But first, our buddy Jason Fitz from ESPN Radio on a number of different sports issues. Next, ESPN 1530, Cincinnati Sports Station.
RDI Corporation presents Football in the Natty, brought to you in part by Papa John's Pizza on ESPN 1530, the official home of the Bengals.
I guess it's Football in the Natty still. All right, 19 minutes after 4 o'clock, this is ESPN 1530. It feels like we haven't chatted with Jason Fitz in weeks, mostly because I haven't worked in weeks. Jason Fitz, one half of Spain and Fitz on ESPN Radio from 7 to 9. Every weeknight, you'll hear it live on ESPN 1530, in addition to 1,000 other platforms, including Cheez-It spots. How you doing, sir?
Man, I'm doing great. I hope you enjoyed a little relaxation and time to recharge, like to bring the best of Mo into 2021. Come on, man.
Yeah, that bar is still pretty low. I just hope you're aware of that.
Well, that's what we do. I like to call it managing expectations. Just, you know, if you do anything great, then they expect it every time. So yeah. I'm the guy that continually doesn't pre-rinse the dishes before they go in the dishwasher, so it's never quite clean enough. Like, that's my life.
Reminds me of when I bought my house, I had a pro come over and do my lawn one time, and now my neighbors expect it to look like that every single time, and, well, it doesn't. Here's what I did during my time off. I went to Atlanta. I went to the Peach Bowl, and I thought, with a minute 34 to go, that I was going to be talking to you as I have all season long about the UC Bearcats, and we could celebrate what we've been saying all year long, that they belonged and that they finished undefeated, and it didn't happen.
I think that might be my most disappointing outcome from everything. And, you know, the funny thing is I was getting ready to do a digital show, and I was sitting next to one of my co-hosts, Trevor Scales, who's a big Georgia fan. And even he acquiesced early on in the game, and he said, you know what? this feels like the sort of game nobody can make an apology for, because Georgia came out fighting. I mean, Georgia was given everything they had, and Cincinnati took all of it. And I thought, going down to the wire, that we were going to see a Cincinnati win, and I'd be able to say, see, this is why, you know, and for all of the conversation about, you know, it seems like every time a team like Cincinnati wins a bowl game, the argument is, well, the other team didn't care because that's not what they set out for. That obviously wasn't the case. But I'll also tell you, like, we watched Georgia, who I think is one of the hottest teams in the country coming into that bowl game, get everything they could handle from Cincinnati. All it did was I walked away from that game thinking it proved the point that Cincinnati belonged. But I hate the fact that the narrative was changed because of the loss.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I also noticed you took some heat from Ohio State fans because you didn't pick them to beat Clemson. But honestly, even living in this part of the country, I don't know anybody who really did.
Well, I mean, I tell everybody all the time, well, if I could pick every game correctly, I would own a small island and I would not work for a living, okay? So let's just be clear about that. But look, Ohio State showed us that, you know, I think the best analogy I've heard is that they were vanilla ice cream all year, and then all of a sudden they come out for this one game and they've got sprinkles and hot fudge and caramel. They've got everything you could want. They showed us the variety and play calling we hadn't seen. And a big change that came out of the Big Ten Championship, for all the talk about Justin Fields, it felt like Northwestern really showed, okay, we're going to take that away. And then all of a sudden, Ohio State was forced to use Trey Sermon, which turned out to be the best force of all time. And they went into that Clemson game saying, okay, we're going to establish the run and see what comes off of that. That's not the way they were running their offense even 3 games ago. So by giving Justin Fields less in the offense, it made them more difficult to beat. It was a stunning development I didn't see coming, and good on them for beating Clemson. Now, I think they're going to get beat by Bama, but hey, I was wrong last time.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I was happy for Justin Fields because I felt like some of the heat he took after the Northwestern game was a little overboard.
Oh, you're not wrong about that. Like, sometimes I feel like what happens, honestly, is we get to these, especially championship games, whether it's playoffs or whether it's conference championships, and what you have are a bunch of people that, frankly, have not watched more than 8 minutes of college football all year that watched that one game and suddenly turned it into this abject disaster. And I don't understand that part of it. You know, when you're talking about the way this season went, I think one of the toughest things for teams to evaluate with Justin Fields is that there was nothing close to normal this year for him. So the ability to come out and, you know, show his toughness was great in the college football playoff semifinal. But realistically, the fact that the offense didn't have a lot of rhythm or sync doesn't surprise me all that much, given the weirdness of what this season was. I don't think we saw anything this year that actually helps NFL people evaluate Justin Fields because it was such a strange year. But I still think if I was picking at the top of the draft, he'd be the second quarterback off the board for me.
Yeah, no, I haven't been dissuaded from that at all. Jason Fitz is with us from ESPN and ESPN Radio. Large national talking point has been Sunday night. We're just getting to it this afternoon here because of the Bengals bringing back Zach Taylor and all that stuff. Do you have a solution for NFL teams tanking, like what we saw the Philadelphia Eagles do on Sunday night?
No, but here's the thing. Like, we've seen some version of this for years. Maybe not tanking, but protecting their own interests is a better way to say it for me. Like, we've seen, how often have any of us sat there and said, oh, man, I hope that this team hasn't locked up their playoff spot by week 17, because if they have, they'll rest all their starters, and I need them to beat this team so my team can get into the playoffs. We're all used to these, like, weird backdoor scenarios that involve really great teams. We're not used to it being this blatant with the tanking. The hardest part for me isn't about the tanking. It's the lost opportunity for Doug Peterson. I mean, I still maintain within the Eagles organization, now they're picking sixth overall in the draft. If you read some mock drafts, whether it's Justin Fields or Zach Wilson, there's a shot that there's a top three quarterback available at six. You have a responsibility at this point to evaluate Jalen Hurts to his fullest against the defensive line that, frankly, is spectacular and a really well-coached defense for Washington. So I would have kept Hurts in just because I want to see what a kid that I'm not sure is my future can do in that moment against the division rival. That matters to me more than getting to pick a couple of picks higher, three picks higher in the first round of the draft. I mean, what do they know about their quarterback situation right now? I'd argue that the answer is nothing. And Doug Peterson now has to look at a bunch of men next year in the eye and say, oh, every single Sunday is about winning, when they know that that's not fair or accurate. So, you know, how many people in that locker room are going to look at Doug Peterson and say, nah, man, like, when you weren't looking at my future when you had me out on the field in a game I could never win. So I think it creates a lot of complications for Philly that are far bigger than tanking.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That's a problem that Doug Peterson's going to have with his own players. It's a problem that any coach would have with his own players. But as a general rule, like to me,
this baseball season, catch every game at Longneck Sports Grill. There are three locations in Northern Kentucky, Wilder, Hebron, and Richwood. Each one of them very easy to get to. Each one of them has 4K TVs all over the place, and the sound will be on. Plus, no place in Northern Kentucky has better wings, and there's also no more extensive beer selection than the one you'll find at Longneck's. Longneck Sports Grill, and by the way, when the weather gets warm, there's nothing like Longneck's patio. Longneck Sports Grill, stay late, come often.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18-plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The Cincinnati Bengals last season lost a game to the Miami Dolphins week 16. It clinched the first overall pick. It clinched Joe Burrow. And it was celebrated. The Bengals have never won a Super Bowl, so I don't know what that feels like. But I knew what it felt like when they wrapped up the number one overall pick, and it was euphoria all around town. Nobody wanted them to win that game. Nobody wanted them to do anything but wrap up the number one overall pick. And so to me, we've talked about, and I'll use the word tanking, there are others, but I mean, we've talked about tanking for so long. It's been a part of the way we talk about sports. We have seen front offices do it. That to me, what I saw on Sunday night, I didn't like it as a viewer of the game, but to me, it was just sort of the next step in the evolution. It was just the next step in the process. At some point, you were going to see a coach do what Doug Peterson did.
Well, I mean, it also tells you that Doug Peterson believes he's got a heck of a future with Philly, because I don't believe he does that unless he believes he's back. But you're right. And, you know, realistically, that's why I come back to every organization has to make the decision that's best for them. I mean, how many Eagles fans are really ticked off by it? The answer is none, right? If you're in the Eagles front office, you look at it and you say, okay, I get it. You know, at some point, the organization is worried about next year. And so are we really going to fault that? I mean, yes, I love the fact that as a Raiders fan, I watched the Raiders-Broncos game, and frankly, both teams looked like they really cared about in Week 17. I cared about it because I don't think there's a huge difference between picking 15th in the draft and picking 18th, for example. So I want to see my favorite team beat a division rival, but I'm not going to fault an organization that sits down and says, okay, what's best for the future is for us to lose this game. I mean, there is no fix for that. I don't want a fix for that. I hate the NBA system of lottery balls, and you know, you never know who's going to win that first pick in the draft. I want the worst team to have the first opportunity to become better, and that's one of the things I love about the NFL draft system. So, if you're in the last couple of weeks of the season and you're telling me you're going to lose, but you get the first overall pick, oh my God, every day, all day. I mean, we all know that.
Yeah, you're right about that. We'll chat next week, man. Thanks so much.
Appreciate you, Mo. Have a great week. Happy New Year, brother.
You too, man. Jason Fitz, ESPN Radio, one half of Spain and Fitz, 7-9. You will hear that after Louisville basketball game. You won't hear it tonight, but tomorrow you'll hear Spain and Fitz. Tomorrow we have U of L and Virginia Tech with tip off at 6:30. Normally 7-9 weeknights on ESPN Radio, which obviously we are an affiliate of. All right, we're done early, as I mentioned, so we have 32 minutes to get to a number of different things. I wrote a column about Mike Brown on Monday. Many liked it, some did not. I'm gonna tell you where I was coming from. And I want you to read it. It's on my blog at ESPN1530.com from The Athletic. I'm going to tell you where I was coming from, and we'll take your phone calls next, ESPN 1530.
You've been listening to Football in the Natty, presented by RDI Corporation on ESPN 1530, the official home of the Bengals.
Well, sports headlines in service of Kelsey Chevrolet, home of lifetime powertrain protection and guaranteed credit approval from their family to yours for life. KelseyChev.com. Xavier home tonight for St. John's at the Cintas Center. That game tips off at 8 o'clock. You can hear it starting at 7:30. After me on 700 WLW, Musketeers trying to break a two-game losing streak. Red Stormers 6-4. Their last game is back on December the 20th. Beat Patrick Ewing's Georgetown Hoyas 94-83. I think there's like not a lot going on right now in sports. In 25 minutes, number 19, Virginia Tech in Louisville. The 90-minute pregame show starts at 5 o'clock tip-off. We'll be at 6:30. No news on the Bengals coaching staff. Obviously, Monday night, Dan Hoard revealed on Bengals Line that Lou Anarumo is coming back for a third season as the team's defensive coordinator. So the head coach is going to stay in place. Offensive coordinator is going to stay in place. And defensive coordinator is going to stay in place. More on that in just a couple of minutes. But first, George is calling from Dayton. Hi, George. What's up? George? George?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. George, what's up?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm wonderful. What's going on?
Great. Okay, so I got a way to fix the playoff, or the draft situation. So what you do is you take the playoff teams, you see them exactly the way they already do it, but then when it comes to the teams that don't make the playoffs, the team that's the closest to make the playoffs gets the first pick, gets the second pick, and they're on.
Not entirely opposed to that. Not entirely opposed to that. You know, you would give, if we keep the field at 14, so the team that finishes with the worst record in the league would get the 18th overall pick.
Yes.
Yeah. Again, anything that disincentivizes losing and that doesn't reward poorly run franchises, I'm completely on board with.
Yeah, it's just an idea. Probably not a good idea for us Bengals fans, but, you know. Yeah.
It would reverse things a little bit, George. I appreciate the phone call. Now, look, I mean, I'll be consistent. I said this when the Browns went 0-16, so I'll apply it to the Bengals as well. Joe Burrow for the Bengals was a bailout. I'm thrilled he's here. I'm as nuts about the Bengals having Joe Burrow as I was, well, a year ago before the Bengals got Joe Burrow. I'm thrilled they've got him. They've got their quarterback situation solved. Hopefully he's healthy. We're going to spend the offseason doing that. But Joe Burrow was a bailout. You don't deserve a bailout. He was a bailout for being poorly run. Four straight years, bad teams. Last year, awful roster. Perhaps misfires in the coaching staff. And they were rewarded with Joe Burrow. There's my sort of built-in inherent issue with drafts. I don't like bailing out poorly run franchises. The Cleveland Browns were poorly run for years. They bought him out, 0-16. What do they get? Baker Mayfield. Now, I don't think Baker Mayfield's anywhere as close to as good as Joe Burrow. Give him credit for helping the Browns get to the postseason. I think they've got an interesting decision to make about him long term. But that's a bailout for incompetence. I don't like bailing out incompetence. That's what drafts do. Sign me up for anything that disincentivizes losing and doesn't bail out poorly run franchises. 23 minutes from 4 o'clock. I wrote about Mike Brown on Monday for The Athletic. And if you haven't seen it, the piece, you can get it on my blog at ESPN1530.com/Mo. And it, to me, the not even anger, but the exasperation isn't with bringing back Zach Taylor. That, I said before, doesn't jar me either way. I don't feel great about it. I also feel like their issues are so long and voluminous and predate Zach Taylor to the extent that who the head coach is right now, it's important. It's very important. It's not as important to me as it might be for you or might be for somebody else. I'm more interested in how they build the roster. I'm more interested in what they can do from a talent standpoint to go from 4 wins this year to 10 wins next season. Because I'm sorry, the timeline always was get to the playoffs by Burrow's second season. And I'm still going to hold them to that. And yet, I don't think they can engineer a turnaround from a pure talent standpoint, that going into next season is going to make me believe they can do that. I could be dead wrong about that. The bigger issue for me was the content of his statement, in which he said, for my money, this is what you wanted. What do you want from me? That's not what he wrote. It's not what he wrote at all. In fact, that the first sentence of his statement reads verbatim, quote, our fans wanted a fresh new direction 2 years ago, and that is what we aim to do in hiring a bright, energetic head coach in Zach Taylor. So two things about that. Number one, I don't believe for a second that Mike Brown wrote that. And the tip-off for me is the last line of the statement. Next year, we will earn our stripes. That, to me, was written by somebody else. Somebody in marketing. Somebody who's launching into an ad campaign. Been a fan of this franchise for my entire life. Just Mike Brown Next year, we will earn our stripes does not strike me as something that he would write, say, or dictate. That came from someone else. But still, to me, what that did is it pointed the finger at you and I. Not for hiring Zach Taylor specifically, but it is, to me, an allusion to 2 years ago when the franchise responded to growing discontent with Marvin Lewis by letting him go. I believe Marvin Lewis was let go in large part because of you and I, because of the public, because of the anger about Marvin, the apathy about Marvin, the discontent with Marvin. Not that there wasn't every reason to move on from him, not that everybody in the organization was on board with bringing him back for year 17, but I believe we were a factor. Bengals fans were a factor. That should have been why you did it. Should have did it because you thought it was the best thing for the organization. So to me, what that was, hey, look, I don't want to do this 2 years ago. I wanted more Marvin Lewis. You people wanted somebody else up, but here he is. What do you want from me? This is what you wanted. That to me is a cop-out. You may disagree, and that's okay. All I can do is I'm paid to tell you how I think, paid to tell you how I feel. It's my job. It's my responsibility. I take it seriously because I want to be authentic and I want to be honest. If you disagree with me, that is completely cool. I'm never offended. I've gotten a lot of feedback about this. I've been told that I'm being unfair. How am I being unfair? I'm reacting to a statement. And the very first thing the statement references is our fans. That's you and that's me. This isn't about our fans. It's about your franchise. It's about what's best for your franchise that we care about and you doing what's best for your franchise. 19 minutes away from 5 o'clock. So I wrote the piece. It's on the blog at ESPN1530.com. I've seen some misinterpretations where I'm angry that Zach Taylor is coming back. I don't know many Bengals fans who are like beyond livid that Zach is returning. I think most are just kind of shrugging their shoulders. Yeah, okay. I don't know anybody who's doing cartwheels that he's coming back. And I think it's an indictment against the entire operation that 2 years into the head coach's regime, we're all sort of lukewarm about the guy. That's not how it's supposed to be. In fact, I think there are people who are angrier about Lou Anarumo coming back than Zach Taylor. What I want to know more than who the head coach is going to be or what responsibility is he going to have is how are you going to make the roster better? This roster, top to bottom, is not as good as Pittsburgh's or Baltimore's or Cleveland's or Buffalo or Kansas City's or Tennessee's. Those are six of the seven teams in the AFC playoffs. And I'll even throw Indianapolis at you. When the rosters, the gap between the rosters have closed, I'll worry a little bit more about who the head coach is. Are you going to close that gap with the rosters over the next 6 months? Hope so. You could excuse me for being skeptical. 18 away from 5 o'clock, 513-749-1530, 866-702-3776. This is ESPN 1530, Cincinnati Sports Station. 12 away from 5 o'clock. this is ESPN 1530. My name's Mo Egger. You can follow me on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter at Mo Egger 1530. I will warn you that you're not going to get much from that account for the rest of the day. Be one of those days where you decide to not really contribute on the social media thing. We are out of the way at 5 o'clock, Louisville and Virginia Tech College basketball tonight. That game will tip off at 6:30, pregame at 5. Xavier and St. John's hooking up at the Cintas Center this evening. Meanwhile, the UC Bearcats are set to return to the court tomorrow night. First of back-to-back road games for the Bearcats, who are trying to break a five-game losing streak. Cincinnati will be taking on SMU tomorrow, who's off to a 6-1 start. The Bearcats are six-point underdogs in that game. This has been a rough go of it for John Brannon. To me, there's a lot of different issues. I'll start with this. I don't love picking on college basketball players and singling them out. But at the outset of the season, I thought that one of the more maybe the most interesting thing about this team was going to be the advancement of the three man sophomore class of Jeremiah Davenport, Zach Harvey, and Micah Adams Woods. And, you know, each of those three players played at a different level last season. Davenport obviously dealt with injuries. Micah Adams Woods had, I think most of us would say, a very good freshman year, right? He brought a sense of calm and level-headedness during a lot of really chaotic times, a lot of really close, chaotic games. Excuse me, thought he had a really good freshman year. His sophomore season to date has been underwhelming. And maybe it's because the backcourt's a little bit too crowded. Either way, there hasn't been the growth and the development so far. Obviously, we're still, you know, it's still just early January, though it's getting late early for this team. That development, we haven't seen it. And Jeremiah Davenport, I think, has been, I would say, maybe not necessarily a revelation, but he has proven to be a useful piece. Plays with energy. He's done a good job of hitting shots. He's gotten better. Zach Harvey, I don't think he's gotten worse because he just didn't do all that much last year. But for a player with his background, and for as much as we talked about his recruitment to UC, and for as promising as he was in the first game of the season against Lipscomb, what we've seen to this point, I think, has been a little bit underwhelming. So you kind of start there. And then I think you go to the inability to close out games. And, you know, a lot was said last season about Jaron Cumberland and the relationship between him and John Brannon. And there's even still, you know, people talking about that this year. Here's all I know. Last season, they played in a 1,000 close games, 7 games that went to overtime. Say what you want about Jaron and the senior season that he had. Say what you want about the relationship between John Brannon and Jaron Cumberland. But here's all I know. Twice last season, late in games, when the Bearcats needed a bucket, start with Illinois State, which was a game played in St. Thomas, and then later that year in what felt like a game that the season kind of hinged on against Wichita State on the road. Twice they went to Jaron Cumberland, twice he converted. Now, there were other games where they went to him and he didn't convert. Namely, the last game of the season last year against Temple, in which Trey Scott bailed him out with a putback with about 3 seconds to go. Cumberland missed a runner, but in crunch time, they were going to Jaron Cumberland. Sometimes he succeeded, sometimes he did not. There's nobody on this team that I think you can go to. Now, I know Keith Williams is supposed to be this team's best player. He is their best player, and it would certainly help if he would stay out of foul trouble. Last year against USF, he was unbelievable over the last 10 minutes, and he was good against USF this year in a game they lost when they tried to stake a comeback as well. But for all these games, which, with the exception of Georgia, have all been kind of hanging in the balance over the last 4 or 5 minutes, start with the Xavier game. You could say this about Tennessee. You could certainly say it about USF. You could say it about Tulsa. They haven't been able to close anybody out. Jaron Cumberland closed out a couple of opponents last year. Jaron Cumberland was called upon, again, even when it didn't work, he was called upon last year to close out opponents, and nobody has grabbed that title of closer. And I don't know what the makeup of this team right now that anybody is going to. And so for a team that is probably not going to blow anybody out, just don't think they're good enough to do that, for a team that's going to have to figure out ways to win games over the last 4 or 5 minutes, I know I'm overly simplifying this. Where's Jaron Cumberland? And it's not to say that it's not better for everybody else that he and John Brannon are no longer having to coexist. It just didn't feel like a great working relationship. It felt like, in terms of system and the way that Jaron likes to play, round peg, square hole, I get all that. But nearly every game last season was close. And when it was, succeed or fail, they turned to Jaron. I don't know that you can yet count on, and I say yet, he's a senior. I don't know that you can count on Keith Williams, and I don't really think there's anybody else on that team that in crunch time you're going to be able to count on. So, and then, you know, Justin and I talked about this, that conversation's on the website, about just kind of going young and turning the team over to some of the younger guys. And that's, you know, you don't want to deny Keith Williams and Chris Vogt an opportunity to play for something more meaningful down the stretch. But if the foundational pieces of this program lie with the underclassmen, starting with the freshman and Tari Eason, and obviously Mike Saunders is a part of that, and Gabe Mattson's not, Mason Mattson might still be, I don't know. Continuing through the sophomore class, if you're going to take some losses, but you're trying to build toward next year, it just might make sense to turn the team over to the lengthy list of younger players. But for now, tomorrow night at SMU if they're going to win the game, chances are in the last 5 or 6 minutes, like every other game this year except for Georgia, it's going to be close. Who are you counting on? So far, they haven't been able to count on anybody. And again, this isn't me wishing Jaren was back. As a player, he had his flaws. He did not have a great senior season by his junior season standards. But as we listen to LL Cool J, I wonder who's going to close out games for him. It doesn't necessarily always have to be one guy, but it helps if you do have one guy who can, and so far this team does not. And that has been, along with, I think, the lack of a leap by the sophomore class, disappointing. We'll perhaps spend more time on that tomorrow. But first, we have to say goodbye today. Right now, I'm scheduled to be on from 7 to 7:30 on 700 WLW. The activity in the nation's capital, I'll put it that way, is maybe going to take priority tonight, so we'll see. You'll just have to listen to find out. 7 to 7:30 after Red's Hot Stove, before Xavier Basketball. If not, right back at it here tomorrow at 3:05. And don't forget, Tony Pike is now 2 hours, noon to 1, every weekday afternoon. I have to go. Thanks to Taryn for producing. Thanks to you for listening. Louisville basketball is coming up next. The Cardinals taking on Virginia Tech on ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station.
This baseball season, catch every pitch at Long Neck Sports Grill. Each location has 4K TVs, so you never miss a game. The menu is so extensive, you can get something different every time you visit. I love the wings. And no place in Northern Kentucky has a better beer selection. Locations in Wilder, Hebron, and Richwood. And when the weather is warm, there's nothing better than a warm spring night on Long Neck's outdoor patio. Long Neck Sports Grill. This baseball season, stay late, come often.